Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we have a crew from the Alaskan Brewing Company. Darren Jensen, Andy Klein, and Blake Haas are going to be here to talk about AK Beer Week. Joy Lyon and Jordan Nigro will tell us about the screening of the film Resilience. We'll get the details about the KRNN Spotlight Series concert with Gamble and the High Cost of Living. And we'll get an update on Eagle Crest, those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon, currently 23 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Obama delivered his farewell speech Tuesday night, reflecting on his two terms in office, and called on people in the United States to get engaged to make change. Chief Kirk Francis of the Penobscot Nation says the statement resonates with Indian country.
In order for us to realize the full strength of our inherent sovereign rights and authorities, it's going to take a collective effort.
Francis also serves as president of the United South and Eastern Tribes Organization. He says the Obama administration made tribes a priority in the last 8 years, pointing to consultation efforts, increased funding, and other initiatives. Enhanced jurisdiction through the Tribal Law and Order Act helped the Penobscot Nation work on drug issues, while the Hearth Act streamlined economic development on tribal land. And there were advancements in health care.
So there's the Affordable Care Act and the permanent reauthorization of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act. That was critical to our health care delivery system by allowing our employees to access federal health insurance. It cut costs hugely. It allowed for more third-party billing. It really boosted our systems in terms of being able to address the huge gap in funding, especially in the contract medical care arena.
Francis says there's still much work to do, including with the presidential transition. He says tribal leaders are already working to make sure the federal government fulfills its trust responsibility to tribes. In his State of the State address delivered Tuesday, South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard says relations between tribes and the state made progress in 2016. But as Lee Strubinger reports, one lawmaker says the governor failed to address a major issue in Indian country, tribal opposition of the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Sean Bordeaux is a Democratic lawmaker in the South Dakota House of Representatives. Bordeaux says he wanted to hear more about the Dakota Access Pipeline.
So to have our own governor not speak about it is a little bit of an issue for the native folks, especially those folks who are still out there, and for all the tribal communities to pass resolutions as our tribal council did at the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, then I think the governor should take a little closer notice of what's happening and try to see how he can improve or what can be done regarding the race relations.
Bordeaux points to the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe rescinding contact with the state after officers with the South Dakota Highway Patrol gave aid to North Dakota law enforcement. South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard says there were a few hiccups with the Crow Creek Tribe.
It's one thing to talk about that when one is upset about something. It's another thing to recognize that terminating the tax collection agreement with Crow Creek means a loss of about $800,000 to that tribe. I think upon reflection, that was recognized.
During his speech, Dugard says he hopes to have tax collection agreements with all 9 tribes in South Dakota. He says that would be the first time in state history. I'm Lee Strupinger in Pierre, South Dakota.
The U.S. Interior Department has canceled the final 2 oil and gas leases in the Badger 2 Medicine area between Glacier National Park and the Blackfeet Reservation. Nate Hedgie with Montana Public Radio has more.
The undeveloped leases were first issued in the 1980s in an area that is sacred to the Blackfeet Nation.
They end to a 3-decades-long struggle.
That's John Murray, a Blackfeet Tribal Preservation Officer. He says that, over the past 30 years, many people fought to stop oil and gas development in the Badger 2 Medicine area.
A lot of those people never lived to see the state. In that sense, it's kind of a real victory, but it's still kind of bittersweet.
The Badger 2 Medicine area is the site of the creation story for both the Blackfeet Nation and the Blackfoot Tribes of Canada. It's on land that is now managed by the U.S. Forest Service. Tuesday's decision by the Interior Department follows the cancellations of 15 leases there held by Devon Energy back in November. Another lease was canceled in March, but Solenex, the Louisiana company it was issued to, is challenging that in federal court. I'm Nate Hedgie, National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. Support by Utah Dene Bekea. Thank you, President Obama, for proclaiming Bear's Ears a national monument, protecting ancestral lands, ensuring our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Learn more at ProtectBear'sEars.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 11, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, and with me in the studio now is the communications manager over at the Alaskan Brewing Company, Andy Klein. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Dude, how's it going?
And the president of the tasting room, Blake Haas. Welcome to the show, Blake.
Thank you.
And also Darren Jensen. He's the communication or the
marketing specialist
over at the brewery. Welcome to the show, you guys. Nice to have you here. AK Beer Week.
Yeah. It's not named after me, AK Andy Klein.
Who?
I know a lot of people think that, but it's not. It's about the state of Alaska.
How did it come to be?
You know, there's a big event that's happening in a couple weekends, which is the Great American Beer and Barley Wine Festival, and that's hosted in Anchorage every year. So that's a big event that's happened for many years. I don't know, Darren, do you know how many years? Is it like coming up on 20 years? It's been a long time.
It is coming up on 20.
Yeah, so I think about 5 years ago, as in association with that, this idea of starting AK Beer Week, having a week-long celebration. And this year, we really wanted to, at Alaskan Brewing, we really wanted to pick up the mantle of that and make sure that people in Juneau were able to really celebrate with a lot of different events centered around our brewery. So we got a whole, more than a week of events coming up.
It kicks off this Friday, right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And Blake's going to be out there with me and Darren hosting a special tasting out at the brewery.
Yeah, we're starting with Roll Out the Barrel, which is pretty cool. It's because we can talk a little bit about it. It's starting at 4 o'clock and it goes till 6 o'clock. And mostly we're going to have we have two of our first barrel-aged beers are going to be on tap, which is our Imperial Smoked Porter and our Imperial Amber Ale. And
those are you heard right.
You heard
yes,
right.
We messed around, shot a triple-double, man.
Yep. Did some barrel aging.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to some barrel aging cool with our amber, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there'll be another little special surprise for everyone that comes there. And it's just going to be a good time. It's going to open house feel for it. And we'll have some cool beers on tap.
We'll be doing a live toast as well. So Andy's going to do a cheers to the kickoff to AK Beer Week. So that starts at 5 p.m. So people can come in, $10 ticket. We'll get you a couple samples. And we're going to have some other things going on there too as well.
Yeah, you get the opportunity to get one of our new growlers of one of the aged beers as well. We started to do growlers in 32-ounce sizes, so a little bit smaller. And so some of those higher alcohol beers, it's more appropriate to put them in a 32-ouncer instead of a 64. And
yes.
It keeps better, you know, it keeps better and keeps longer, yeah.
You know, let's get back to these events in a minute, but this just sort of seems indicative of the momentum that your size of brewery has right now in the nation. Do you guys feel that too?
It's a really interesting time in craft beer world in general. And you're right that there's this whole, you know, there's this whole awareness that's really built over, I'd say even the past just 5 years or so, of what craft beer is about and all these cool little places, right? Anytime you take a trip, one of the first things you do is go, hey, what breweries are around? What are the tap rooms? You know, what's happening? That kind of thing. So I do think you're right, Scott, that that's happening. And breweries our size, that we're kind of considered a regional brewery. We're in 18 states.
Yeah.
So we have the capacity to really dive in, and we have some resources to celebrate these kind of events that are going on. And for us, it's kind of a new thing, and we're getting excited about it because Blake and the people that are working at the tap room, we're really starting to push that idea of making that a real attraction, a real destination for as a brewery. And, you know, before it's just kind of been there and you're on your way to Costco and you stop by, right? Now we're trying to host events and really try to draw people out there.
Seems like maybe you guys have three of the best jobs in the city.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Can't complain.
All right. So on Saturday, you're taking it downtown, huh? on the 14th.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to be hosting a beer dinner. Darren's been working on that one.
Yeah, that's been pretty fun. So yeah, we're going to do a 5-course paired with beer beer dinner, and that's going to be in Bocca al Lupo. So that's the new Italian place, the old Silver Bowl. Working with Bo and Travis on that. They came up with a really killer menu, and then we kind of did the beer pairing side. So that's going to start at 5:30. So we'll do kind of a meet and greet. We'll have a brewer there on hand to talk about our beers, and also he's got some chefistry background as well. So he's a great point of contact, and he'll be there mingling. And then we'll kick things off right at 6:30. And then start up the dinner right from there. And
that's 5-course meal. Yeah.
5-course.
That sounds great. And that's kind of a new thing too, right? I think people used to not think of pairing fine cuisine with beer.
It used to be a wine. Wine has been the tradition, right? Yeah. You try a different wine with every course.
A lot of people are into this, right?
It's a big deal. Yeah. So I mean, the craft industry has really taken off. So everybody's kind of aware that beer can pair with food. And so now it's really getting even more complex and spicy foods pair better with IPAs, and even to that level where they're cooking with beer, that's another level of chefistry.
Blake and Darren are both, I would say, a new term, beer geeks, right? That's a term that wasn't used 5 years ago. But when it comes to, like, these guys are doing bottle exchanges with friends who bring in wild, cool, interesting stuff all the time. You realize once you talk to someone or have dealt in that world at all, the taste variety that's happening in beer right now is astounding and rivals wine in every way. So when you can have desserts that pair perfectly with certain types of beers, and then you can have appetizers and fruit and all that kind of stuff, can all, depending on the beer, you can do really creative stuff with it. It's pretty fun. In fact, we should take this opportunity to maybe wet your whistle a little.
Yeah, I'm so parched. What do you have there?
Well, we got this brand new. People might have seen these in the store here in Juneau. This has been out for a couple of weeks, but it's the Husky IPA, and it's our spring seasonal. It's a India Pale Ale that's made with exclusively the Mosaic hop, and people are loving this in the tasting room, right, Blake?
Yeah, it's going crazy. People love it. Absolutely.
So, what's the talk us through the taste profile here? Let me do this though. You can turn it. Ready for this?
Yep.
And get the pour. Hold on. The pour.
It's like he's done this before. Is that weird?
Was a perfect pour.
Have you ever worked in radio before, Andy?
Thank you.
Theater of the mind. Hopefully everyone in the audience is thirsty now for one of these delicious Husky IPAs.
If somebody wanted one of these, where could they go?
You're fine.
All over town. The best place to go is to the actual brewery. We have it there. We can give you a sample of it. We know you're going to love it, but you can still get that sample. It's one of the best IPAs we've done. If you just smell that aroma right away, get your nose in there, you're going to get a lot of citrus, primarily grapefruit, which is pretty cool because grapefruit's kind of becoming a popular ingredient in beers a lot of days. And that's purely from the hops that are in here. This is a new world hop. It's Mosaic. You get a lot of that tropical grapefruit notes from it. So when you actually try it too, it all translates into the taste too. It's a fantastic IPA.
Kind of new school variety hop.
It's grown out of the Yakima Valley and Washington State, where a lot of incredible hop variety and innovations being
conducted. That's what you mean when you say new world hop.
Yeah, there's
North America.
Yeah, there's your classic hops, like your noble hops and your English hops. And those are, what they've been brewing with for centuries.
European variety hops are what those are,
Mm-hmm. And today's IPAs, it's a lot of new world hops. It's a lot of those fruity characteristics, citrus, tropical notes.
But I guess that hops grown in Australia would be considered new world hops as well. And then African hops, that's just starting to be happening. And there's some New Zealand hops out there as well that...
Yeah, Australian hops and South African hops are really known for their tropical qualities, whereas American hops are a lot of times citrusy and piney and old school, like your English hops and stuff. Those are going to be earthy, spicy.
Fuggles and stuff like that, right? That's my favorite. Favorite name for
Fuggle.
A hop.
I think it's delicious. And I've talked to Andy before. I'm a fan of like a light IPA.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people are really getting into like the triple hoppo, I think that's great, and I'm glad people like that. But for me, something like this is really nice.
Yeah.
What would you put the percentage at on there? Like, what would you guess?
I'm not sure I could give a percentage, but on a scale of 1 to 10, I would call this, for me, and I'm no expert, but like a 4 on the hop scale.
Okay. On the hop, what about on the alcohol scale?
Yeah.
Your 5, normal? Medium? I'm no expert.
Huh? It's 7%.
It's 7%. It's pretty big.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, your typical PBR is what, 4.5, yeah. Something like that?
Yep.
So that's how you deal. That's your measurement scale is the PBR.
Hey,
so
I'm
just interpreting it for you, Scott.
Thank you.
And most of our main beers are right around 5.3. So Amber and Free Ride and those white ale are all 5.3. And then you get a little bit bigger. You were saying Hopothermia. That's 8.5. That's a double IPA, Imperial IPA, big beer. But this one is 7%, still drinkable, but yeah. It's got a little something there.
Right? There's a kick.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. That's delicious.
Yeah. We got one more to try, and we can talk about other events, too, if we got two more seconds or
we
so.
Certainly
yeah,
we do.
All right. This next one's called Smack a Grapefruit IPA. This is our pilot series one. And what Blake was saying about that last one really tastes grapefruity because of the hop variety used in it. This tastes grapefruity because we use grapefruit in it. We actually use grapefruit pulp in this. Grapefruit juice and pulp is used in this. So it's got a really nice kind of sweet grapefruit variety. It's not an abrasive, overly bitter grapefruit quality, I would say.
It's not going to overpower the beer. It's just a nice nuanced grapefruit flavor in there.
Kind of a juicy complement to the hop bitterness.
Is it true the history of IPA is that they put hops in the beer so it would preserve longer for the big trip around?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Cape. Yeah. Yep.
They raise the alcohol level a little bit, which is a preservative factor as well, and then they put in hops. There's a little bit of a legend about that. It's the hops don't act, in and of themselves don't really act as a preservative, but they put in extra hops so that the flavor would last longer of the hops. So that wasn't the thing that was preserving it. It was really the higher alcohol content that was preserving it. And at that time, the higher alcohol content wasn't super high. It was in the 6% kind of range, you know, and that's right around where our Icy Bay IPA is.
Yeah.
And so but now IPAs are starting to bump up there a little bit in alcohol percentage.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a trend that's happened, especially with West Coast IPAs that America's been taking the lead on.
Yeah. And with session beers kind of making a comeback.
That's right. Yep. So now we have like our kicker session that covers your IPA flavor, but at a lower alcohol. And these other ones kind of cover the traditional IPA and bump up the alcohol level a little bit.
Yeah.
A little warming, as they say. There's a little warming on the back of the throat.
And this is, do you guys get to do this every day? Like have a taste of beer?
Usually we get a little more than this. So this is kind of an off day for us.
It depends if it's your week on Taste Panel or not.
Got it.
You know, we actually take it. So it comes up all the time, Scott. People ask that all the time. And actually, it's one of those things where we definitely enjoy it, but it's a really serious part of our job, right? And we have to do taste panel and taste these different flavored beers all the time. So it's fun, no doubt about it. But no, we're not. We don't get to just hang out. We don't get to just hang out and drink at work. No.
All right. Let's see. Monday, January 16th, a growler fire sale.
Yeah, so what we're going to do for that is we have all sorts of different ways that you can fill growlers. We have the traditional glass growlers, stainless steel, the drink tanks. We have new cool Growler Works ones that are pressurized and everything.
Stanleys.
The Stanleys, yeah, we got new Stanleys in. Those are all going to be half off from 4 to 6 o'clock. You still got to pay full price for the beer, but
cool. It's, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know we were doing that. That's cool.
Growler fire sale.
And then just to cut to the chase, basically what we could just tell people is that we have kind of a couple of really cool events happening. Friday is that opening toast. Saturday is our beer dinner. We got stuff happening all week long.
Every day.
So stop in basically between 4 and 6 every single day at the brewery. But the other big special thing is the thing that's happening next weekend, right? That's the other thing we wanted to really make sure people know about.
Yeah, so we're going to do well, we like to call it the epic vertical tasting. It's going to be a vertical tasting of our smoked porter, the most award-winning beer in American history at GABF. So we really want to open up our library to everybody. So we're going to have beers available that we're going to try. We're going to get at least 6 samples starting from 2005 to 2015. And we'll be able to try those. Maybe something special will be on there. The 2016, we'll be able to try that as well. So vertical tastings are just pretty special because you're able to try side-by-side vintages of beer to see how that beer has matured. And
have you ever tasted one of the old smoked porters?
I have.
They're amazing. They mellow out, and all these different flavor profiles and characteristics come through. It's really fun to – it's been one of the funnest things at my job, having worked at the brewery just for a few years now, but to sit down with people who are experts like Blake and Darren and like and brewers that are there and say – and work with them through what you're tasting, you know? Because you're like, what is it I'm getting? And they're like, well, maybe a little tobacco or maybe a little, you know, horse, you know, saddle leather. I mean, you know, there's all these kind of weird things and you can describe the flavors and aromas that you're tasting and all those things are kind of accurate, you know, for porters or smoke porters like the Alaskan smoke porter.
And that sort of is the capstone on the AK Beer Week.
Yeah.
And I bet you have all of this on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Or Facebook, you can go to our website as well, askinbeer.com, go to our events page, and it's just a right click all the way to the right. It's events. Go there, and it's got a list of all the events going on for the whole entire state during Craft Beer Week. So
starting this Friday, it looks like there's something every day until next Saturday, except for Sunday.
Except for Sunday.
Got to have a day off.
Take a break.
Day off. It looks like a lot of fun. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Go check out the Alaskan Brewing Company's Facebook page or their website. To take us out, you guys, can you tell us a few words about this beer that we're drinking now? How's it taste? What should we be looking for in this one?
Definitely getting, let's see, so aroma-wise, I mean, you do get like a bit of grapefruit, right? So there's some hop variety in there. But you do get a bit of a grapefruit. And for me, it's kind of this, the flavor is this kind of a juicy grapefruit. It's a little on the sweeter side, so you're not getting that tangy, bitter. You're not fighting with the hops, you know. Exactly. So the grapefruit is actually kind of adding something to the hop flavor.
Some grapefruit IPAs, a lot of them are excellent, but some of them are a little on that abrasive side. They use the rind of the grapefruit to give you that real bitter abrasiveness, and we didn't use rind in this. We used just pulp, so it's really juicy. Makes the back of your tongue kind of, you know, like, get all nice and juicy. And, it's pretty good. Thirst quenching.
You guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
If I could have a beer with Jesus, heaven knows I'd sip it nice and slow. I try to pick a place that ain't too crowded, or gladly go wherever he wants to go. You can bet I'd order up a couple talls and tell the waitress to put them on my tab. I'd be sure to let him do the talking, careful when I got the chance to ask. You tell me how'd you turn the other cheek to save a sorry soul like me? And do you hear the prayers I send? And what happens when life ends? When you think you're coming back again, I tell everyone, but no one would believe it if I could have a beer with Jesus. If I could have a beer with Jesus, I'd put my whole paycheck in that jukebox, and I'd fill it up with nothing but the good stuff, and sit somewhere we couldn't see a clock, and ask him how'd you turn the other cheek to save a sorry soul like me. How'd you change a sinner's heart? And is heaven really just beyond the stars? Yeah, I tell everyone, but no one would believe it if I could have a beer with Jesus.
hope and pray each day until we shut the whole place down. Ask him how'd you turn the other cheek to save a sorry soul like me. What's on the other side? Is mom and daddy alright? And if it ain't no trouble, tell them I said hi. Yeah, I tell everyone, but no one would believe it if I could have a beer with Jesus. Yeah, I tell everyone, but no one would believe it if I could have a beer with Jesus.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
You're listening to A June Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 11th. It's about 26 minutes past the top of the hour. And joining me on the show now is Joy Lyon. She's the ED of AEYC and also Jordan Nigro, the manager of Zach Gordon. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hey, thanks, nice Scott. To be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So we're talking about the film Resilience, which is you're going to screen on January 17th, so a week from tomorrow at Centennial Hall. A really interesting film. I watched the preview today, and it really looks poignant. You want to tell us a little bit about how you chose it? And it looks like you have lots of partners and all the whole story.
Well, you know, what was it, about a year and a half ago, we did a showing here in town of Paper Tigers, which is sort of the sister documentary, I guess, to this film, also directed by James Redford. And Paper Tigers is about a alternative high school in Walla Walla, Washington, and what the school did to really changed the way they were working with kids because they were having so many kids get kicked out due to behavior problems. And what they really found out is that was all due to childhood traumas. And so there's a lot of work going on in the community around ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and what that means and how we can build resilience within kids and families and reduce ACEs in our community. And so this just seemed like the next natural step for community education and getting the word out there. And resilience is a little more of the nitty-gritty of the biology of stress and how it impacts children and what that looks like and what we can do to build resilience. So, yeah.
Okay. Joy, can you tell us a little bit about AEYC and how you got involved?
Yeah, we promote high-quality early learning for all young children, birth to age 8. So we support parents through Parents as Teachers, Imagination Library, different programs to make sure parents have all the support they need in their very stressful job. And we also support early childhood programs because many children spend much of their day in various programs. So this really gets down to the nitty-gritty of what, a lot of our problems in Juneau, you see the crime and hopelessness and homelessness and substance abuse and all of those issues, what they discovered in the late 1990s, it's shocking that it wasn't until just so recently that Kaiser Health Foundation did a survey of over 17,000 of their patients. And these were pretty high, they had good jobs and health care and they were middle-income people. And what they were shocked to find out how many of these people that seemed to be functioning quite well had adverse childhood experiences. And some of those are what you could imagine. They studied 10 of them. And their physical, emotional abuse, living with someone with mental illness, having a parent in prison, living with someone with substance abuse, those kinds of things that cause a lot of stress early on in a child's life. And so what they realize is that there's this correlation with health, with, you know, everything from smoking to diabetes to dropping out of high school, teen pregnancy. There was this high, high correlation with the more ACEs, adverse childhood experiences you had, then the more of these negative outcomes you had. And so the resilience film really goes, it's really high impact and really well done. It's gotten 8 different international and national film festival awards. And it really gives you a very quick look at all that research, but presented in a really engaging way to see that, you know, it's called The Biology of Stress and the Science of Hope, because the film also goes into what are the strategies that are helping to mitigate those toxic stresses for children that turn out so challenging. So it looks at, it gives you a firsthand view of what some of the strategies other communities are using that really have been shown to turn things around. So we're really excited because Trevor Storrs from the Alaska Children's Trust will be here, and he's going to lead kind of a community cafe discussion. There'll be tables set up. Lots of snacks and refreshments, appetizers will be served. And so there'll be, people can stay and process a little bit so that we can really look at our community. What do we want to do to make things better for kids and youth in Juneau?
You know, I'd have to agree with you that it seems really well put together, this film. The people in it speak with the same passion that you two do here. And, you know, one of the lines I remember from the preview was that, you know, sometimes our minds don't remember what happened to us as kids, but our bodies do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we used to think, well, you know, until kids are old enough, nothing really matters to them. And really, the things that you don't remember are deeper in your psyche, really. And so it's just, we'd never realized until the late 1990s. And we didn't even know until the late 70s that our whales were going to Hawaii every winter, you know? And it's like, it's that much of a shock to me. Because once they did this research, then on top of that, there's been, I don't know, 60, 70 different different research that's confirmed that. And in Alaska, there's 80 peer-reviewed research studies that confirm that. And then in Alaska, we have here right in Juneau, we have Patrick Sidmore, who's done looking at Alaska, and he has found, you know, just the same kinds of correlations. And we're, as you can imagine, are a little bit higher number of ACEs than the rest of the country, unfortunately. So by the time a child turns 5, 15% of kids have 2 or more ACEs.
And then moving to kids 12 through 17 in Alaska, by the time in that age span, 35% of those kids have 2 or more ACEs. And what they find is that when you start out with getting some ACEs when you're super young, you're more likely to get more as time goes on. So it's all correlated. And you know, that it impacts even things like heart conditions later in life. And that's what the film speaks about, that, you know, a lot of times people make assumptions that, you know, I think a lot about things like, oh, well, this person, you know, they're mentally ill because they have a chemical imbalance. That was the term always when I was growing up, you know. And now what we know is a lot of mental health problems, a lot of physical health problems actually originate in our bodies from trauma very early on, that many people who experience addiction, mental health, even things like diabetes and a lot of different physical conditions are linked back. You know, in the research showed that over and over and over again, and it was no small study. And what's also really neat for Juneau in particular is we've had the benefit of having both of the doctors who put this study on here in Juneau. There was one other showing of this film. Joy and I both were able to see it then at the ACEs conference this spring. But that was a pretty small group of folks, so we want to open this up, and, you know, just have more people getting the information.
Because everybody knows if you're under a lot of stress, you're more likely to catch a cold.
Right.
And so it's the same kind of concept. If children are in a lot of stress, that's when their brains are really forming. Like, there's a synapse formed every 7 seconds, you know, 70 every second when they're young. So, you know, they're just in this incredible growth spurt when they're just the first 3 years, 3 to 5 years. So that's the time when you can make the most difference by reducing that stress in the home. And there's some really well-founded, you know, practices that really turn things around for kids and families. So we'll get a look at that, those two in the film. So it's not just, you know, it's a lot of hope too, because it's like, oh, well, now that we know this, we could really, really make a difference in our world.
It's great how diagnosis, in a sense, this is a key to diagnosis, right? We're starting to be able to understand where some of these kids.
Where did it all come from? Yeah. Why is it all going awry?
When Al Folletti, is that his name? Dr. Folletti. When he was here, one of the things he said that I just totally agree with, and it is just stuck in my head, was that ACEs are really the number one public health crisis that we have, and it's completely preventable for the most part. I mean, obviously, sometimes families divorce and things happen, but a lot of it is completely something we could prevent. And even the stuff that's not preventable, if we do the right things to build resilience in kids, they can get through it and be perfectly healthy.
It'd be hard to say who wouldn't benefit from seeing this film, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Everyone, whether
it affects
you're a parent
us all.
Or maybe you're a boss and you're dealing with employees that have an adverse childhood experience. It'll help you understand people.
Yeah.
And once you have this new lens to look at the world after seeing this film, I just really encourage people to come out. It's free, no cost. There will be snacks.
Discussion afterwards.
Yep. And it's like you say, Tuesday, January 17th. So just remember, it's right after Martin Luther King Jr. It's a holiday. So Tuesday is right after the holiday. And it's from 5 till 7 at Centennial Hall. So people can just stream in after work. And
should people call you, Joy, if they have questions?
They can call me at 789-1235. And there's no registration necessary. You can just come on in.
Great. Thank you both for coming on the show. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think just please come. You know, I think one of the things, sometimes people see this stuff and they think it's just for the providers or it's just for, you know, but I think your point to there isn't anybody that can't benefit from this is really accurate. And I think even more, you know, families, please join us, because it's really a great film and there'll be some great discussion afterwards.
And I bet it's free.
It is.
Tuesday, January 17th. That's a week from yesterday at Centennial Hall, 5 to 7. And thank you again, Joy Lyon and Jordan Nigro.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Get your tickets for the KTRO and Taku Fisheries Seafood Festival on January 28th at Centennial Hall with Breezen, Salt, The Rookery, Saffron, Twilight Cafe, TK McGuire's, Coconut Thai Cafe, and V Celador, serving seafood at its best. Specialty desserts and a beer tasting with the Alaskan Brewing Company complete this culinary celebration benefiting KTOO. Tickets at ktoo.org. The Seafood Festival is brought to you with sponsorship support from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
This is Bird Note. The cry of the kittiwake rings out across the northern ocean. Kittiwakes were well known to even the earliest northern seafarers. Named for its rhythmic calls, the black-legged kittiwake, as it's known in North America, is a dapper oceanic gull. The tips of its pale gray wings look as though they've been dipped in black ink. Unlike many gulls, kittiwakes spend most of the year at sea and are seldom seen inland. Vast numbers live on the Bering Sea, where they are by far the most abundant gull. Ornithologist Arthur Bent wrote of nesting kittiwakes, "This species is always associated in my mind with the dark, frowning cliffs of the frozen north, which tower for hundreds of feet above the stormy, ice-bound seas until lost to sight in shrouds of mist and fog, a safe retreat in which to raise their hardy offspring." In winter, black-legged kittiwakes can be found along the west coast from southern Alaska to Baja California, and along the east coast from Labrador to Florida. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 11th, 20 minutes till the top of the hour. In the studio now, the
what?
One, the
Who?
Only,
the three.
Colette Costa.
Enough for two.
Welcome. It's so good to see
so
you.
So good to see you. Let's just move forward, shall we?
This Saturday night.
What are you going to do?
One of the
what are you doing
greatest
this Saturday?
Dance
Scotch
parties
Burton?
In the history.
We're going to take the house and bring it down. We're going
to
take
to the ground.
The roof off the walls.
At the Jack.
At the Jack, and then bring the walls down. And then rebuild them. And then take them down again.
Wow.
Because there's going to be 10 of us on the stage.
Doors, 7:30.
For those of you who don't know, we do a wonderful series, the Goldtown Theater and KRNN. The Spotlight Music Series, been doing it for, 4 years now? Hard to believe. And the newest edition, the newest, what's the word I'm looking for? Version.
Venue?
Venue, no, no.
Iteration.
Ugh, that's so NPR. anyway, the newest one we're doing is going to be this Saturday, and it will be featuring this awesome new band that I just happen to be in, but I am absolutely, I'm without a doubt, hands down, the weakest link. And that's not saying much because I understand how weak of a link I really am. It's a 10-piece band. It's awesome. 5 horns, 3 rhythm, 2 singers. I'm missing somebody. Oh, boy.
Will you give us all those names?
Really? I always forget them. I'm not reading them. Don't give me that paper like I don't know. There's Dirty Doug. There's Mashy Mike. There's Other Mike. We used to have 3 mics. We got rid of one. There were too many. There's Dale the Whale. We got the Twin Towers of Alexi and Terry. We got the ladies, Jill and Katie, blowing on the brass. What? Me, I got Gamble next to me. He kind of, you know, he does a lot of the heavy lifting, and I'm just there to make the place look good. But I felt like there was a glut of, does glut mean like a lot or none? I always get
that
mixed up. It means a bunch?
Like okay. A plethora, more than a plethora.
I felt like there was an unglut of Motown music being represented in our wonderful, wonderful town. So
you have a special connection with Motown, right?
Well, only when I'm there, and then it touches me specially.
If people don't know what Motown is, will you give us the 101?
It's the Motor City, baby. Come on, how do you know what Motown? Give me a break. My gosh. Even you know it. You went to Montessori.
I know, but there might be a few of our listeners.
You went to a special version of homeschool Montessori, and even you know what Motown is. Don't start with me. Good Lord. The Motown label created by Berry Gordy around the early 60s in Detroit, Hitsville, USA. It's right there still on the boulevard. You can go visit it. You can see Stevie Wonder's Piani. And we're going to be covering a mix of awesome 60s and 70s soul and R&B music from Stax Records, Muscle Shoals, Motizzle.
McGivney's is running a bar there. It's 21 and over.
21 and over.
Alaska Music One. Keith Giles will be running sound, so you know woop, it's woop. Not going to be quiet.
It's not going to be quiet, and it's going to be awesome, because if we are terrible, he's just going to overlay,
He has knobs, filters and stuff.
We're so going to lip sync. It's going to be awesome. We're going to make Mariah Carey look like a professional.
Forecast a few highlights from that night, Colette, for us, if you will.
Oh, God, it's all so fuzzy. I think you're going to be looking for some dapperly dressed people, thanks to Valet Brown Boots. And we're going to be hitting on Sam and Dave's Soul Man. We're going to hit some Aretha. I can't tell you what one, because you'll know which one we'll be destroying. We're going to hit some old school Stevie Wonder. We're going to throw a little Laverne Baker in there. There's a little name to twinkle up your day. It's some
Sly
missed. And the Family Stone. It's going
to
be an awesome dance night, super fun. Really, in the weather and the both metaphorical weather and real weather we've been having lately, we all need something to cheer us up, and this is it.
Doors at 7:30, tickets at ktoo.org or
krnn.org,
or come down to the station. $15, you're benefit the artists and public media in Juneau. It's going to be a great show. Watch the roof come down this Saturday night.
Come on, dance, people.
And the high cost of living.
Ooh.
Anything else, Colette?
Yeah, you play this inappropriate song, but it is Aretha, who we love.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit him,
was his eyes. Stealing kisses from me on the sly. Taking time to make time. Telling me that he's all of mine. Learning from each other slowly.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 11th. It's about 13 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Merrill Jensen from the Arboretum, and also Allison Gillum from, she's the ED of the Alaska Land Trust. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks for having us, yeah.
Yeah, nice to have you. So you have a special event coming up on Saturday. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, pretty much every year in January, we put on kind of a winter seminar event to get people out of their homes and out kind of interacting with people and hopefully learning about something interesting. So this year, we were thrilled that Merrill Jensen agreed to do a presentation, which I'll let him tell a little bit more about.
It's the Girl Gold Miners of Pearl Harbor. It's the history of the first folks that homesteaded out there in 1904. It was John and Marie Peterson of Peterson Lake and Peterson Creek are named after them. And their two daughters that grew up out there at Pearl Harbor, and when they were in their teens, they started taking over the Hard Rock Gold Mine from their father because he developed stomach cancer. And they didn't want to lose the property, so these girls rolled up their sleeves and started hard rock mining when they were in their teens. And then it carries through what they continued to do after he passed away.
Okay, sounds interesting. Allison, tell us a little bit about the Southeast Alaska Land Trust and what all you do.
Yeah, so we're a land conservation organization. One of the reasons we're excited about this presentation is it's about the Jensen Olson Arboretum, which is actually the first property the Southeast Alaska Land Trust protected back in 1998. So it's a property that's near and dear to our heart. But so we protected that property, and generally we do land conservation throughout all of Southeast Alaska, you know, all the way down to Ketchikan up to Yakutat, and protect important habitat throughout Southeast Alaska.
Excellent. You're the ED. About how many individuals work for the organization?
We have two full-time employees right now. We're actually hiring, so check out our website to see the position we're hiring for right now, so we'll end up with three full-time employees. Yeah.
Okay. Merrill, what struck you most about in your research and all of this from this story?
The thing that's really interesting about it is the amount of material that the state archives have. They've got the journals from the girls from when they were in their mid-teens, when they took a trip to Germany to visit their cousins back in Germany, and that's when they started journaling. And the day-to-day entries of, you know, growing up out there at Pearl Harbor, and then the just insane amount of work that they did, and then the records that they kept. They sold produce to the grocery stores here in town as part of their money making scheme. They were quite entrepreneurs. They raised mink, they commercial fished. They had the contracts to run mail out to the lighthouses. They did the produce and just all kinds of stuff like that. So just the amazing amount of information that is out there if you look for it.
Okay. Allison, can you give us the details on the event again on Saturday?
Yeah, so it's Saturday, this Saturday at 7 p.m. It's at the Egan Lecture Hall at the UAS campus. There's a suggested donation of $20. It all goes to support the Southeast Alaska Land Trust.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on the show, you two. Anything else you want to add?
No, I hope people come out and enjoy the show.
Yep, see you Saturday at the program.
Great, thanks, you too.
Yep, thanks for having us.
The University of Alaska Southeast is open for business. Courses in record keeping, QuickBooks, financial accounting, and business management are offered completely online. 2017 is the year for finishing degrees and to increase earning power. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/SOM or call 796-6409 to speak with an advisor about spring 2017 registration.
Coming into the country, John McPhee's best-selling book about Alaska is a snapshot of the state at a pivotal moment after the discovery of oil, but before the first barrel flowed down the pipeline. In January, Alaska's Energy Desk will celebrate the 40th anniversary of the book's publication with a live forum. Come meet Willie Hensley and other guests featured in the book as they talk about Alaska, then and now. Join us Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. at 360 in the KTOO building in Juneau.
I thought I was fine, but I was surprised to hear I had high blood pressure. Now I've got it under control.
I still feel young, so I didn't think I needed cancer screenings. I'm just glad we caught it early.
I feel great, but my doctor said my blood sugar put me at risk for diabetes. Now I'm watching what I eat and getting regular exercise.
You can look fine and feel fine and still have health issues that need attention. Make an appointment for a yearly checkup.
This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 11th, about 8 minutes until the top of the hour. And it's time for our check-in with Eagle Crest. And as part of that, we have Mountain Manager Matt Lillard and also Scott Fisher. He is a teacher at the Nordic part of the mountain. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Good to see you.
There's snow in the forecast, Matt.
There is. We had a great holiday break, and we got a couple days off here, but it looks like the snow is coming back starting tonight. So I think by the time lifts open tomorrow, we might have an inch or two.
And you have a great base?
We do. Oh, yeah. We've got an amazing base. This is definitely the best snow we've seen in about 3 years.
Yay.
So, yeah, we've had some great skiing. We're looking forward to a lot more great skiing this season, and it's definitely going to come back and be snowing, you know, coming into the weekend. So we're definitely looking forward to that. Come on up. You know, a couple of things going on around the mountain. Monday is our second season pass holder bring a friend day. So find a friend who's a pass holder and you can come up and ski for free.
Which day?
Monday the 16th.
All right.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. That's a second of 3 days there. So
I feel a cold coming on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's a day off. it's a day off for most people. Right. Yeah, so hopefully you take advantage of the great day off and come up to Eagle Crest. We've also got two great Avalanche programs coming up. So the Avalanche 1 and Avalanche 2 through the Alaska Avalanche School courses are coming up right around the bend. And it's a great thing to get educated on backcountry safety, how to travel out there, you know, kind of know what you're doing. The Level 1 is on January 21st through the 23rd. And the Level 2 Avalanche class is from February 2nd through the 5th. And you can register for those through the Alaska Avalanche School at alaskaavalancheschool.com. So we definitely encourage people to check that out. They're great courses. It's a great program. You know, the more people out there that can get educated on avalanche safety and backcountry safety, the better.
Okay. Scott, how are the loops looking up there?
Well, the loops are in great shape. And the Nordic program, the Nordic Ski School cross-country part of the Eagle Crest Snow Sports School is super excited because this year – the lower loop, which is where we do all of our – or like to do all of our teaching if we can, is in great shape. Matt's crew has done an awesome job of making sure that all of the 6 kilometers or so down there are in really good shape. And it's just as well-groomed as I've ever seen it in many years of skiing there. And, yeah, I'd like to just mention some of the programs that we offer – through the snow sports school. The cross-country programs that I most want to talk about, the first one will be starting this Sunday, the 15th, and it's called Learn to Nordic, and it's either a – you could either do a beginner classic skiing session. It's it starts at 10, and it goes to 10 in the morning till noon. And it's the first of three Sunday classes, and it's either classic, like I mentioned, or skate skiing. You can choose. And the price includes a trail fee for this particular series. It's $69. And if you need to rent skis, you can rent them at Eagle Crest Rental Shop for $30. For classic skis, and if you need to rent skate skis, you would rent them at the Foggy Mountain Shop. Then the second program is going to start next Sunday, the 22nd, and that's will be the first of two sessions, the next two Sundays, and that is a Nordic Skills clinic for people who have had some experience, either classic or skate. Again, it's either. You can choose. And the program, and that program is designed kind of for that intermediate person who wants to improve their skills, maybe go to, you know, planning to go to the Tour of Anchorage or the Buckwheat Classic in Haines up in the pass there. And then I just always like to mention that the ski school, Nordic Ski School, always offers private lessons. You just need to call Eagle Crest Ski or Snow Sports School to reserve a time with a, you know, one of any of a number of really good instructors. And
sure.
So we're offering quite a bit this year, and we're really happy about the conditions.
That's great. You know, I think a lot of people, when they think about Eagle Crest, think about the downhill, you know, which is amazing. But a lot of people love the Nordic, too.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years we had such marginal snow conditions that I think people kind of forgot that skiing can be so great up there, especially on that lower loop.
And how would you describe sort of the joy of Nordic skiing?
Well, I get out there on the Nordic, on the lower loop, and you come out into an area we call the Meadows Loop. It's kind of in the middle of the 6 kilometers of trails. And it's just an awesome view. The trails kind of undulate through the woods, and it's just a magical place. And I love to go out there and just get out and ski as long as I can.
Fresh air and exercise.
Absolutely.
Well, this sounds great. You guys, we're just about out of time, but I bet all this information is on your website.
You got it. It's all at skijuno.com. You can also check us out on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to sign up for those Nordic programs, like Scott mentioned, call the Snow Sports School at 790-2000, extension 211.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.